Peter Wilt, who's one of my favorite people to talk to in American soccer, joins us. And at this point, you are now involved in an effort to bring an NASL team to the city of Chicago. You and I have had talks about that in the past, and anybody who doesn't know is, you know, please go on the internet and do as much research as you feel is necessary to kind of get up to speed. But Peter, there's been a little bit of talk about reviving the name of the Sting. Is that something that your group is considering, or that you've mulled over as a way to capture the history of the city?
Yes, and we on our website we have a survey, ChicagoNASL.com, that asks fans what name they would like for the team. It's an open-ended question. The Sting is by far the most popular response, almost 40%. But that means that there's more than 60% of the fans that want anything except the Sting. And it's an interesting dilemma, because it certainly would provide an instant brand that would be both recognizable and, for those who do recognize it, a positive recognition. But on the other hand, there's a large swath of the community that either doesn't know the name Sting or wants to have their own brand. My fear, if we would go with Sting, is that it might be viewed by many people as kind of a nostalgia act or an oldies act where, yeah, it's kind of something neat, let's go see it once, and, well, it's different than what I remember, and they don't come back. I don't think a new team necessarily should only appeal to that older generation. So, again, it doesn't mean we won't go there, but it means there's certain reasons not to.
So that's an interesting conundrum. And we've seen, you know, obviously from your time in MLS, I'm sure you have a perspective on how that league addressed some of the history. And I'm sort of fascinated by the evolution of the thinking in those circles, because certainly from the league's very beginning, and your team, the Fire, came in just a year after the launch of MLS, there was a clear decision made not to lean on any of that NASL history. Now here we are, you know, 20 years later, and certainly the Sounders coming in the league in 2009 and the Earthquakes rebranding themselves that after being the Clash, there was a choice made. Okay, well, now we're going to we're going to embrace that a little bit more. What do you think happened there?
Well, there's a gap between the Sting and the Fire. You know, between the outdoor Sting and the Fire, there's about 14 years. With the Sounders and Earthquakes, I think in Timbers, certainly, in Whitecaps, maybe less of a gap in people's memories. And I don't think the Fire ignored the history of the sport in Chicago. I think they chose to honor it in a different way. The Fire in those days, as I said, they had their reunions. They kept Lee Stern, Willie Roy, and the players in the inner circle of the team. They were part of what we were doing. And it's important that you pay homage to those previous teams. In Indianapolis with Indy 11, we hold an annual Indiana Soccer Heritage Night and invite all the old pros from the various incarnations of professional soccer in Indiana to be there and to honor them. So there are different ways. You absolutely cannot forget about the past. But you don't have to necessarily try to recreate the past either.
Peter, it's fortuitous that we have you on the show to talk about both the history of the Sting and about the growth of soccer moving forward. You obviously have been part of the launch of several different soccer clubs, most recently Indy 11. You're now working in Chicago. And over at Howler, I believe you've got a kind of an in-depth look at the condition of expansion in professional soccer in America. Give me an outline here as to your approach in looking at this issue, both as somebody who's working in expansion directly and as somebody who's been through the process.
Right. It's almost a manifesto. It's about 5,000 words, so I apologize to anyone who loses an hour of their life reading this. It's going live on HowlerMagazine.com as we speak. It's an analysis of open markets, for the most part, in the United States, and the criteria of what makes a good market or not. You know, we all look at Cincinnati and what a great success it's been. And certainly there's reasons for that, ownership, management. But is there certain criteria of that market that can be analyzed and looked at in other markets to say this would be a good market or this wouldn't be. It's some of it is quantitative, things like population, existence of other sports teams, quality venue availability. Some of it is demographics or qualitative. You know, the percentage of homegrown population is important. And that means, you know, will there be a loyalty to the community from the people that live there? Or is it more of a transient community like Las Vegas or Miami, you know, to the extreme markets in that realm? So we look at the various criteria. And then in the second part of it, which is has also been posted, we rank the top markets based on this criteria. And it's been fun not only writing it, but putting it into practice, because in addition to working to get the Chicago NASL team launch, which we're still hoping for in 2018, I'm working with Club 9 Sports, an investment banking kind of a boutique that works with buyers and sellers to for transactions of sports teams, and you know my area obviously is in soccer, and so I'm working with several different markets across the country on assessing what they have and what they need to put together a professional soccer team that's successful in their market.
Yeah, from what I've absorbed so far, Peter, it's fascinating. I think people will be intrigued by the rankings, which you do, as you said, some of it's quantitative, but you do admit that there's a subjective element to your rankings. I don't know how much you want to give away, because I think that's that's the entry point. Everybody should read all 5,000 words, but I think people love rankings. Peter, do you think you're going to get any pushback, any backlash to your choices?
Oh, I hope so. That's the whole idea of ranking them, isn't it?
Yeah, I imagine that's true.
Say, you know, one of the categories we have is markets of 1 million or more that do not have a professional soccer team. The top five, I'll read them without necessarily the order, and I'll let people read to find out what they are. The top five in no particular order are Detroit, San Diego, Austin, Texas, Baltimore and Nashville. And there's arguments for each one of those to be the top, but then none of them are perfect. I would say I think all five of them are excellent markets for expansion, and it's remarkable that there's no professional soccer in any of those five.
You know, in the abstract, and we obviously talk a lot about expansion here on this program because it's part of the American soccer experience in 2016 and probably will continue to be for some time, as you well know. In the abstract, all of this stuff, you know, it gets us excited. Oh, what would a professional soccer team, and you can project NASL or MLS or whatever you choose to, what would it look like in Nashville or Baltimore? I had a discussion with somebody about a top-level team in Pittsburgh. Could that work? I mean, obviously, they have a USL team, but who knows if there's a bigger market there. Do you think that there's any danger to that? Because clearly there are a lot of variables, including the type of ownership and the commitment there, and some of the organic support elements that you really just can't project until you actively go and chase a team in a given market.
No, you're right. And Cincinnati is an example of that. You know, Cincinnati had a hard time drawing 1,000 fans for about their last attempt at professional soccer between 1998 and 2003. And with their attempt at amateur soccer, very few people attended those games as well. So that shows that it's not exclusively about the demographics or this other criteria. It does need quality ownership, quality management, and a good plan of attack. So there's a combination of it. But I think this criteria listing helps people understand the foundation that's needed to have a successful team.
So would you say that the expansion of professional soccer in America is more art than science, or is it still mostly science?
That's a great question. It is a combination. It's getting to the point where there's very much science involved, and specifically it's about engaging the local community in believing that this is their team. And there are specific things that can be done in terms of engaging the millennial crowd, especially to become active supporters and not just advocates for that team, but evangelists. And when that is activated, then it becomes successful. And it's really the tribal mentality. And much of that is science. I mean, there's an art to it, but it's about making those connections by having specific types of partnerships and executing it. And what's exciting about the sport nowadays is there are so many more people that get that and are implementing it, especially at the lower divisions. You see what's going on at in the NPSL and PDL. It's fascinating. And we all talk about Detroit and Chattanooga, but there are others. You see Kingston and San Francisco City and Tulsa. I mean, there are some really fun things going around this country in markets that you never would have thought 10 years ago could have had active support for the sport. It bodes well. The growth of the next 10 years will be even greater than what it was in the past 10 years.
Peter Wildt from Chicago, I guess, is just where I'm going to put you right now. Peter, you're working there, of course, with Club 9 Sports on this program to bring an NASL team to Chicago. Your resume includes Indy 11 and the Chicago Fire and indoor teams. And I'll ask this, and I'll finish this. This is an appropriate place to go as we finish this conversation, because this is the argument that I hear most when it comes to the expansion of soccer, especially at the lower division in America, that without the carrot of a promotion into a higher league through performance on the field, these clubs are hamstrung, locked in, limited, that the inability to move up prevents them from reaching their full potential. Do you think that that's true? And if so, how can that be overcome, barring the miracle of ProRel happening?
Well, the first question is, yes, I do think that's true. I think there would be a massive increase in attention to the sport in this country with some sort of promotion relegation system. I think there'd be more buy-in, more interest beyond the local team. There'd be a connection to not only other clubs but to other leagues. And it would become important, more important for people. The second question is the most important one. How do you do it? And that will lead to my next manifesto. I've actually got it written. It's being edited and will be published at a site to be determined in the next few weeks. But that one's even longer, so you're going to need to set more time aside, because I spend most of the time in that article not writing about the arguments for ProRel and the arguments against, but how to implement it without taking MLS down. It's important to me that the people that have invested so much in the sport in this country, specifically the couple dozen investors in Major League Soccer, see their investments increase in value because of ProRel, not decrease. And there are ways to do that, and that's what my next article will talk about.
I'm very much looking forward to it, as I imagine are a lot of people in American soccer. Peter Wildt, Peter, I would love for you to be, leading a blue ribbon panel to get us to that point. Unfortunately, no one's funding that at the moment, maybe one day. For the time being, best of luck in Chicago, and certainly hope to have you back on the show very soon. Maybe when that manifesto hits the internet, we should have another chat.
Sounds great. Thanks, Jason.